The AC Podcast is a ministry of Apologetics Canada and is supported by the generous donations of our listeners. If you would like to partner with us in this ministry, please go to apologeticscanada.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the AC Podcast. This is Steve Kim.
Andy Steiger.
Terry Crosby.
Terry, what do you have for us today?
I have a couple quick stories here. One has to do with the Nugget Kid. You hear about the Nugget Kid?
Nugget Kid.
Terry.
That concerns me.
I'm afraid to ask.
Okay, this is his tweet. Okay, it goes, yo, at Wendy's, how many retweets for a year of free chicken nuggets? This kid has broken all retweets, beating Ellen DeGeneres. I don't know how many retweets she had for her Oscar picture. He has 18 million retweets for this tweet.
Okay, so he tweeted out and people have retweeted it.
Yeah.
A record number of times.
Yeah. Wendy's said in their reply, it'll take 18 million retweets to get a free year of chicken nuggets.
Oh,
or nuggets,
wow.
Whatever, right? And he's like, consider it done. All right, help me out. You know, he pleaded to the masses, and sure enough, by 3 million tweets, Wendy's came back to him saying, "Okay, we got your respect. You know, you get your 1 year of nuggets."
But he
is over 3 million. He's up to 18 million, beating Ellen DeGeneres.
Yikes. But how many did Wendy say he needed to get to?
18 million.
Okay,
and he did that.
And
wow.
He did.
Just that tweet, and he got free nuggets for a year.
I don't know if that's a good thing.
That's what I was thinking.
To eat a year's worth of nuggets.
Let's see what he looks like after a year.
The guy's going to die.
Oh, man.
Well,
I'm concerned for him.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay, on Tuesday, Snapchat did an update, and they said, now you don't have to just do 10-second Snapchats. They're going to go from – you can set your own time. You can either, you know, whatever, 10 seconds up to infinity.
Okay.
So do you guys Snapchat?
I don't.
You know, I have it, but I haven't used it in a year.
We are friends, or whatever they call it.
Are we?
Yeah.
Snapchat me, okay, Terry.
This is going to be my second Snapchat ever, and we're going to put it on infinity.
Yeah, Terry's got his phone out.
Yeah, it's coming up. We're going to Snapchat it, and you'll see what we look like today. Okay, here we go.
Nice. So your infinity Snapchat requires that you continue to press your screen?
Yeah. So there you go. If anybody wants to hit me up at Ripley and see the Snapchat.
That's what this was really about.
Totally.
It's just getting more Snapchat followers.
I need more friends.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right.
For that.
All right. Let's move on. We have a very special guest here today. For those listeners who have been with us right from the beginning, you recognize this guy. We have in our studio, John Morrison, our good old friend, John.
Hello, everybody. It's great to be back.
Welcome to the show, man. I should say welcome back.
Thank you. Yes, we were here on the very first day. And now look at you guys. You've got your own studio and an Oilers fan. Terry.
Yeah, representing.
We should probably tell people that the very first podcast that we did, we're in the children's room of the church on these children tables, and we were sitting on little children's stools, and it was ridiculous.
It reminded
Do you remember
me of
that?
The very first conference that we did when we had to have breakout sessions in the nursery at Coquitlam Alliance Church, and we ran out of chairs, and so we had to give them those little chairs. So
humble beginnings.
Very humble beginnings.
So now we're actually in a real studio with real chairs.
We've come a long way.
We've come a long
real
way.
Real headphones and real apologists, too. You guys have really emerged.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
If you're not familiar with the whole story here, John actually has been with Andy longer than I have. You know, people mostly hear my voice, always associated with Andy, so people think I've been with Andy for a really long time. Actually, here's somebody who's been with him even longer. He was with him right when the Apologetics Canada Conference first started.
Yeah, John and I actually went out and had lunch and talked about it.
That's right. We went to Original Joe's in Coquitlam to pitch an idea about having a conference together. We were introduced by a mutual friend who told me about Andy's thumbs. And I was just instantly impressed.
Instantly impressed.
Do we need to Snapchat these
your
thumbs?
For those of you who don't know, I was born with big toes on my hands.
It's fantastic. He hits the space bar like none other. Yeah, so I was happy to help out Andy that first conference. He was just starting this ministry called Apologetics Canada and needed some support from local churches, and we were able to get around him, a couple of guys that were interested in apologetics or just dabbling in apologetics, I guess, at the time. And Andy came up with an opportunity to host a conference. And that first year, it was more than any of us could expect at about 700. So, we were expecting maybe a couple hundred or something.
It was awesome to see how God blessed that and continues to.
It just showed how there was such a market for apologetics. And now I look back many years later and people talk about apologetics far more than we ever did back in those days. So I just credit the Ministry of Apologetics Canada and other ministries as well. And the internet has helped spread ideas a lot much faster than maybe before, but it's great to be back here and to see you guys.
We should say that not only has Apologetics Canada grown, John, you've grown.
Thank you.
Wow.
No, which way?
Come on now.
My wife's cooking is very good, but I don't know if I wanted to talk about
we wanted to go there.
You've replicated.
Oh, yes, right. Yes, multiplying. Mm-hmm. Yeah, since last time I was on the podcast, we've had two daughters. One baby, Abigail, who's actually a toddler now, and Gracie, who's 2 months at the time of this recording.
Congratulations, man.
Thank you very much. It's been a lot of
sleepless nights these days?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, there's always sleepless nights, but now they're just for different reasons, right? Before, I was thinking about the Kalam cosmological argument, and now it's because I've got babies crying. So it's a great season of life. I'm really enjoying it and trying to find time. I mean, I've had to cut a bunch of things out so I could do, keep ministry going and stuff. So get to watch as much sports and fantasy pools and stuff like that. So
nice. Speaking about finding time, somewhere in being a dad and a husband and everything else you do, you wrote a book.
That's right. Yeah, I have another book coming out with actually, you guys are helping me publish it once again. Apologetics Canada Publishing has been so gracious to support me once again with my
book. That was actually your idea.
That's right. Yeah, we wanted to create
Apologetics Canada Publishing.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. We wanted to create Canadian resources, and the big dogs in America weren't necessarily looking at us.
We should actually throw that out there. A lot of people don't realize how difficult it is for a Canadian author to be published.
Yeah,
because they look at the country that you live in and the size of your audience. That's why, by and large, the vast majority of authors are from the United States.
Yeah.
It's a real shame.
They want to know how big your church is, and they probably won't really look at you unless it's 3,000 or something. Well, that cuts out most churches in Canada.
I mean, these days, that even is pathetic. I mean, most American authors that are a pastor, I mean, we're talking 20,000 and up. People in their congregation, and then that's going to get you a publishing deal. It's something that concerns me. We probably shouldn't harbor here, but it does concern me that these days it's not about the content, it's about your platform, which concerns me about the quality of books that actually get published, which is ironic, right? Because in the past, most people say, oh, self-published books, those, I'm going to question that content. Well, in fact, I actually question the content of most of the books that are being published these days because of their standards.
Yeah, that's the beautiful thing about the internet now is because you can have great ideas and get them out there. So you don't have to go through the big publishing companies anymore. You can start your own publishing company in Apologetics Canada. And all of a sudden you can get resources out there that are widely available to anyone around the world. So the beautiful thing about the disruption that's been in the communication industry, and I mean, everyone's felt it in books and music and any consumable media, is the big guys are scratching their heads being like, how do we cope with these changes that have happened? So in the publishing industry, it's been great because we can publish stuff and get our work out there and spread it across the world, which no one would ever think about being able to do that 50 years ago, right?
So tell us a little bit about the new book that you've written. The title really grabbed me, actually. It's called Life Hacks. And what came to my mind immediately was, well, the life hacks that you see on the internet, like this is how you can use an empty plastic container to, let water come out a little farther down the sink, that sort of thing. What got you to write this book?
Right, Steve, well, that's a great example because I love those hacks. Anytime I see hack in a blog title, it's clickbait for me. I'm a sucker for it. I just want to know shortcuts. I want to know little secrets, things that are even just interesting, finding everyday things and making them applicable to other uses is cool for me. So the book, I probably should back up a bit. When I was a youth pastor in Coquitlam, I had to give away a graduation book every year to my students. And I was looking at some of the books, and we were investing some serious resources into it. When you're graduating many students, you're putting money into it. And I thought, is this the best resource to be putting all this money into, you know, like say 101 Bible promises for grads. No offense if our, if the author of that book is out there, but I was like, I know my kids, you know, growing up in post-Christian Canada, I don't think they're going to want something as cheesy as this. Then I thought about other books that aren't related to grads, and they're great books, but are they that specific for the questions that those kids are going to have to be working through at the time? So I wrote my own, and it was a fun process. I had many hours on my hands. I was as single as they come in those days. And so I wrote a book just addressing some of the things that I would have liked to have read as an 18-year-old. And I called it...
I was going to ask, what was that book titled?
It was called There's Something I Think You Should Know, and it was about 7 years ago. I took it out of print because I was young in those days. I mean, I'm still young in these days too, but I was younger, and since then I've had a little more life experience and realized that this book actually speaks to a lot more than just high school graduates. It speaks to college graduates. It speaks to people working through questions of marriage prep. Even people wondering what apologetics is. I have a whole chapter dedicated to, you know, making sure you're training yourself up for the kind of issues that are going to come up. Like they came up to me in my mid-20s. That's when I really had to wrestle with apologetics, when I didn't find myself equipped enough for the questions that were coming to me as a pastor. One more thing I'll just say is, having many years now under the bridge, I'm able to see that these questions that we often think, oh, young adults are asking these questions. I had a retired guy reading it just the other day, and he's like, I love the book. It's perfect. Don't just say that it's for high school grads. So we call it Life Hacks because of all spectrums of life, people need these. And the hack part is really just the things that Jesus taught us, the secrets. I guess they're not secrets because the Bible is the best-selling book of all time, but the truths embedded in the pages of Scripture are really great hacks for the questions that we're asking here in the 21st century. So,
What are some of the chapter titles?
Right. Well, I don't have the exact titles in front of me. I know one is called Always Be Ready. I mentioned that one about apologetics. One of them is Become the Person You'd Like to Marry. So it's all about preparing your character for the day that you meet your spouse, and you want to be ready for that time, because 5 sessions of marriage prep were not enough for me in premarital counseling with my wife. We probably could have used 30 sessions or so. That was a tough first year. But anyway, that's another topic too.
There's a lot of podcasts coming out.
Yeah, but you have your whole life to start preparing for marriage. And are you becoming the kind of person that the person you want to marry will be attracted to? Because I think opposites can attract with subtle things, like the band guy might fall in love with the math girl. But when it comes to character, opposites never attract. You always become who you always attract who you become. So anyway, that's another topic.
Gosh, like I'm listening to this, I'm like, I wish I had some of this insight growing up, because in a lot of ways I feel like I was neglected, like because I was so busy learning how to do algebra that I wasn't really prepared for life, so to speak. Already, I'm just like, I want to pick up a copy of this book and pass it on to my kids, you know, that sort of thing. Now, when you wrote this book, did you have millennials in mind specifically?
Yeah, I think so. I think the questions, I mean, I would fit within the millennial category.
Yeah, you're sort of at the tail end of it.
Right, I'm the old millennial. I'm the millennial with kids and a mortgage and then an old car or whatever, and no Snapchat. Anyway, but I'm still a millennial, so I'm given the label often. I think like a millennial. I've swam in the waters that millennials swim in. I breathe the air that they breathe, and so I'm comfortable with the kind of questions that they're asking, because I think I've asked many of them myself. I wrote the book, for millennials, but knowing that they're not really known as the reading generation, so to speak. So there'll be some other resources accompanying this book and some online stuff that they'll be able to work through and stuff. But yeah, it is a book for millennials, but like I said, other audiences are enjoying it. And that's been encouraging to me to realize that these truths in Scripture are timeless. They're for every generation, but every generation also must be able to give a response to the issues that they're facing. And those issues are particular to a certain demographic, I would say.
Speaking of issues that they're facing in not just a demographic, but a culture that demographic's living in, what do you think are some of the major challenges that young people face in Canadian culture today?
There's so many, and you guys cover them so well in this podcast. There's issues with secularism and working through and the naturalistic worldview. The questions that high school students are being asked to deal with. One, they're coming way younger. talking about sexuality and when it comes to looking at really strong.
I should say that my son is 9 years old, so he's going to be 10 in August. I'm amazed at the kind of questions he comes home and talks to me about.
Right.
And the conversations that we have. I in my mind, I had envisioned that these deep conversations were going to take place in his teen years.
Right.
And now I'm realizing, no, these conversations happen way before, you know, the teen years. The teen years, it seems that's when he's just going to implement what has already taken root. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, my oldest is a toddler, so I'm a few years away from that, and I certainly wouldn't claim to give advice to parents, but shaping of a worldview begins far earlier than we think, right? And when it comes to that, I know we have lots of parents listening here who lean on Apologetics Resources and Apologetics Canada to provide those resources for their parenting and helping them to help around the dinner table or maybe late night bedtime chats. And so we all have to be ready to give an answer for the reason for the hope that is in us.
Do you think, though, that we have a tougher challenge at this than perhaps Canadians would have in the past? You gave a talk at the Apologetics Canada conference this year, which we heard a lot of positive feedback from, I think you addressed this issue.
Right, yeah. I was amazed because, again, I grew up in secular Canada. We would call it secular Canada because I look at my grad class and I was probably one of two Christians among over 100. I always thought that was normal. But if you look back at the history of our great nation, even as far back as the 60s, Canada was actually statistically more Christian than the United States. And we had more Christian involvement in politics. We had more Christian involvement in our communities. And just people would identify more as Christian. Up to 90%, Mark Knoll, who's a sociologist in America, he would say up to 90% of Canada identified themselves as Christians. But I mean, I wouldn't say they were all Christian per se. They weren't probably card-carrying evangelicals. I know that they weren't. But it's interesting to see that there was that explicit Christian culture. So some of the stuff that they would have talked about in school, they would have even had, you know, prayer in school, prayer on big holidays and all kinds of stuff. And it just would have been natural, part of like I said, the air that we breathe or the water that we swim in. It just would have had a Christian influence. That is all gone today in the 21st century. And so those are the challenges we have to address.
As I was listening to your talk from the conference, one thing that really stuck out to me was the devotionals on national radio.
Yeah, on CBC Radio, they would give a 10-minute devotional every morning. And I just thought, man, you never see that today. How interesting.
That kind of gives you an idea as to just how significant Christianity was in the life of an average Canadian back then,
right?
Even nationally.
And we would celebrate Dominion Day. July 1st was always Dominion Day, where we celebrate the fact that God was going to have dominion from sea to sea. That was where the dominion of Canada came from. And they celebrated the sovereignty of God on July 1st. And in the 80s, that was all gone too with one passing of legislature in the middle of the summer. The government passed it and nobody was there to defend it or back it up. And I don't know if anybody really wanted to. I mean, today we talk about Canada Day like it's always been around and I love Canada, but I didn't realize that we used to celebrate Dominion Day. And how much more special would that have been? How much more meaning would that have brought to July 1st and realize that this was the Dominion of Canada where God had his rule and reign over?
I have a question for you, and it's been on my mind lately with regards to millennials in the church, and it has to do with the technology that we see coming into the church, coming into our lives, everything like that. Mm-hmm. I know Andy's doing a series in young adults about technology right now, I think.
Yeah, it's called A Theology of Technology.
Right. There's a lot of these advances coming in, but for myself, I see it more in a negative respect, especially with regards to social media and how easy it is for people to stay away from the church and get their church online on a podcast, because millennials these days are really going to podcasts rather than the church.
Amen. No, yeah. I mean,
and it should be Apologetics Canada podcast, right? So how do we move forward as a church?
I've certainly thought about it a ton these days because, I mean, I'm of the persuasion that we have experienced a communication revolution as dynamic as the Reformation was. Theologically, maybe, you know, we don't have a huge theological reformation needed, but the technological changes that have come, I mean, the internet is very young, but the opportunities that are there are immense. And you think of, I mean, we talked about publishing books, right? It was in the old days, it was a few publishers held a lot of power, and they were the kind of the gatekeepers of what got published out there. Well, that's all gone now, whereas anybody can publish anything. And so there's cons to that, but there's also some pros that we are in an information revolution where there's so much content coming out and everybody can be a publisher. And if you look at what Martin Luther was doing with the Pope in those days of the Catholic Church, he was trying to liberate people to be able to read the Bible in their own language. And he was also saying anybody could come to God. I mean, he was leveling the playing field completely. So the gatekeepers of who got to God and who could be influential in the church were taken out with the Reformation. I think it's a similar thing going on with online. And so while I do agree that there are many challenges, and I mean, I just don't want to be the guy that's saying, you know, I don't care about that Twitter, YouTube right. face or whatever, you know. I just want to say maybe God is doing something in this as a part of the mission that
don't
he's
think
been leading.
A lot of people neglect to think that perhaps technology comes from God.
Right.
I mean, God, at the very least, made the possibility for technology. Mm-hmm. And I would argue clearly that, I mean, God is a God of technology. I mean, even Jesus would have used technology as a carpenter. I mean, even the fact that he would have worn shoes, wore clothes. I mean, these are all aspects of technology. Right. Which yeah. I think a lot of people fail to see or to understand, appreciate.
And I think Terry rightly points out, like, there are many pitfalls here and snares that are coming, and we, without discernment, will walk into them and be entrapped by them, and it will destroy many people. However, I want to say, what's the opportunity that, as Andy said, that God has provided for us to get the message out, right? As we continue on as Great Commission people to make disciples of all nations, we got to reach all over the world. But it also means getting into every earbud and, you know, on the people's drive home or whatever. Like, who
Snapchat.
Knows where people are? Yeah, Snapchat. Right. Who knows where people are listening to this? They might be running on a treadmill. They might be doing yard work. Whereas before, they wouldn't be getting a chance to consume this kind of content. But now here
it's
we are.
It's all on their phone.
We have more power on our phones than the greatest supercomputer of 50 years ago, right?
Oh,
it's just astounding to me. So to me, I'm just like, I want to take advantage of this while I understand that technology can... you know, it can make us shallow and we can distract us or whatever. It also can do many great things. So
I think that's a good point, because there's a lot of people, and we see this with books like The Benedict Option and others, mm-hmm. that would say, oh, and I got to be fair, I haven't read that book. So, but from what I've heard about it, there's this idea that, you know, perhaps Christians should run and hide from technology or just from the world in general. And so, John, I'm hearing you say, no, we shouldn't run and hide, but more than that, we should see this as an opportunity that God's provided for us. The thing I think, though, that's the challenge, and this is where I like Life Hacks, the book that you wrote, is a lot of people, though, haven't just taken the time to think about the technology and to think about the direction that their life is heading and where should it be going? What should they be doing with technology? What shouldn't they be doing with technology? I mean, it seems as though technology is coming at us at such a rapid pace that people just jump into it without doing so thoughtfully.
Right. And that's why I think we need discernment and you need community and like real life community to help you out to say, hey, you know, I think this is too much. I mean, people blame millennials for being too engaged on technology, but I go to family dinners and you look around the room and it's the Gen Xers, the baby boomers that are on their phone scrolling through scores and all that. And the millennials are correcting them because they've had to learn that when you're in a social environment, put down your phones, turn it off, keep them at the door. Put them in a basket. Some people do that.
I was out for dinner just last week, and here my family and I, we came to this restaurant with a deck of cards, and we spent our time waiting for our food playing War. Our kids just learned how to play War, and they love it, which is driving me crazy. But I see this family, though, beside me, and it was their extended family. I mean, they had this huge table, and every single one of them were on their phone. And the ones who were the least on their phone were just like you were saying.
Right. Because they had to learn, right? I mean, we learned the hard way and we got a reputation for it. Millennials have. But we've had to learn, like, you lose quality of your actual relationships by being on your phone. But generations who were later to technology are now having to learn those lessons. And that's why I think technology is not just a millennial problem. It's across the generations. Go ahead.
As an individual, it seems to me like the technology, your phone, has to be a discipline.
Right, exactly.
Right? I mean, for myself, a couple of years ago, I had to put it away for all day Sunday and not touch it in the morning till like 8 o'clock in the morning. Because, mm-hmm. you know, I grabbed it as soon as I woke up. And, you know, most days I wake up like 5, 5:30, right? So it's just like, don't touch it until then. It has to become a discipline. Do you
totally.
Agree?
No, I agree. And I've had to learn that too, right? I mean, in the morning, I went to bed last night not knowing who won the election. First thing I went to was my phone to find out a little bit more of the details. But then I sensed the still small voice of God saying, hey, come to me. And mm-hmm. I mean, it just happens that I have a daily Bible reading plan. I get it right off my phone. And then I have an app that leads me in a prayer time as well. So it's got ancient prayers of the church. But again, that's just using technology to enhance my relationship with God.
Well, see, and that's the challenge, right? Is with sin, with evil, is, you know, something can be used for good. Technology's neutral. But in our brokenness, we can very easily use it for evil or for bad. In the sense that where I can see technology is becoming a challenge is that we'll often use it in place of our relationship with God in quality relationships with people.
And that's why I think every disciple has to figure out, what is God leading me to do? And so just personally, I've been really challenged by this idea that Jesus says it's more blessed to give than to receive. And so how I interpret that, I mean, it could be financially, it could be with your time, but really to me, I'm realizing Jesus could have also meant online. And so whenever I go online and use this technology that's available to us, whether it's a new social media app or it's my phone or podcasting gear, my instant thought now, or at least my correcting thought that I've learned, I want it to be more instant, is how can I give now? And so as a Christian, I want to learn what it means to be more blessed to give. And so I open up my own website and I blog and I hope that it will add something to people. So I'll give some of my understanding, my knowledge. I'll do apologetics ministry or something. I'm coming here today to hope to add some value, some content to the internet world. If I can help anybody in some kind of way, then that's what I want to do. I want to give because I want that blessing that Jesus talks about. I don't want to just open up my technology to consume, to take, to learn, to grow. It's important, and there is a blessing in that, but it's more blessed to give. And so I just want to be a content creator and help people in any kind of way. And that's what God has called me. For other people, it's going to look a lot different. They might not write a book. They might not have their own podcast. They might not have an apologetics ministry, but they hopefully can find some way to use technology to take advantage of the opportunity that's been unprecedented in history that we have before us with the rise of communication as we have it now. So,
yeah, speaking of content, John, you also have your podcast.
That's right. Which, I just started a podcast, the John Morrison Podcast, which you guys will be guests on very shortly, and I look forward to that. But again, it's just an opportunity to have conversations with people and to add value. So before I talk on every single time, I just say, okay, we're having a conversation, but we're also cognizant of the fact that we want to help people out there. So we're not just talking for talking's sake. We're helping people.
And what's the show called?
The John Morrison Podcast. It's a little bit narcissistic, but I thought the amazing podcast or the best ever podcast
John Morrison.
Yeah, it might be too much. So actually, I thought the most humble would be just call it my name and keep it as boring as possible.
All right. Boy. Well, we'll make sure to put your link on the show notes. And so make sure listeners, you go there and check it out and leave some good feedback and reviews on iTunes. Apparently it matters.
It really
in the
does
eyes
matter.
Of Apple, and yep. It actually helps our ministry grow that way. So check out the John Morrison Podcast and check out our podcast. Leave us some good reviews there. As we close, let's transition into our final segment. We're going to look at a question that was sent in to us by a listener, and this time this listener sent us an article from Pathios.com. And for those of you who are not very familiar with it, this is a library of blogs. And there are lots of different people talking about lots of spiritual issues, some Christians, some atheists, agnostics. This article is titled, Why Your Children Do Not Need Apologetics, written by Unfundamentalist Parenting blog. Her name is Cindy Brandt. In response to the recent release of the Case for Christ film, she wrote this blog article. Let me just summarize it really briefly, and then we can talk about that for a few minutes. Basically, her concern with apologetics is that it is done out of fear, and it narrows our faith and confines it into doctrine and then we're also leaving our children with the burden of defending God. And that those are her basic points there. Now, to be fair, she is not opposed to being engaged academically and having these intellectual conversations and things like that. But I think towards the end of her article, I think this quotation really kind of crystallizes everything. She says, "But the problem with apologetics is with its aim to fortify a narrow position and keep our children insulated within that shelter, whereas a healthy critical engagement will always have its goal, a deeper connection with others, even those who practice very different beliefs. Insecurity drives a person of faith to defend their faith, but one who is truly confident of their own spirituality will not be afraid to love those who believe differently, to connect with others without fear, and partner with them to do good together." So, you know, this is Apologetics Canada, right? So I'm sure there's lots that are brewing in your mind.
Well, the first thought that went through my mind is when I was reading, I was trying to read it charitably because I find that a lot of people normally, you know, they have something good to say or they're trying to spin it in a certain way to maybe grab your attention or get you to think about something. But in this case, I really just think that she's got it wrong. There was actually very little redeeming about the article, in my opinion. I think that she's just confused. For example, she begins the article by saying that 1 Peter 3:15 is a proof text, and that apparently that is being taken out of context. That's just not correct. 1 Peter 3:15, Peter is writing to a church that is experiencing persecution, and he's encouraging them to be able to give a reason for the hope that they have, even in the midst of the challenges of the culture that they're living in, and that they would be firm in their belief. And this is something that you see Peter doing in Acts from the very beginning with his first sermon. He gives a reason why people should put their hope into Jesus. And then as the church is persecuted, he continues to exclaim that message.
But even in quoting that verse, she left out some very important words: gentleness and respect.
In the article, she sees Christianity as these people do apologetics as very antagonistic.
Right.
She has a certain conception of what apologetics is, right? And I find this to be the case with a lot of baby boomers. They
misunderstand it.
Yeah, because they've seen apologetics done very poorly.
And in fact, I would say that she's got it actually completely backwards, in the sense that people who don't have a strong faith, or people who don't have good reason for the hope that they have, they tend to be antagonistic, mean-spirited, and not gentle. You know, and what I find is the exact opposite was when somebody is solid in their faith and they do have a good reason for the hope they have in Jesus, as Peter says, that is going to lead to gentleness and respect. And if it doesn't, I don't know that you're following Jesus, because Jesus tells us, right, you'll know who my disciples are. Why? How? Well, because they love one another. We want to be a people that love people, but we also want to be a people of the truth. Now, this is something that comes out in her article, is that she seems to have an idea of apologetics as kind of this hellfire and brimstone, you know, fear-mongering people into the faith, and or bullying them into the faith.
And petty, right? Like, because you narrow your faith down to a set of doctrines. And she talks about how, you know, like, faith is a dynamic experience that can't be just reduced to a set of propositions. And I found it really odd, because what is she doing in saying that? She is reducing her view of what faith is into a set of propositions. That's exactly what she's doing. And so in a lot of ways, what she was saying was very self-refuting.
Well, in that she was giving an apologetic for not giving an apologetic. She was giving a reason why you shouldn't give a reason.
Yeah, and I also found that when she talks about how faith is a dynamic experience, the thought that came to me was, well, what does that look like? Does apologetics have a part in it at all, in this dynamic experience? Why should that be excluded? Right. And then again, it comes back to the idea that she has a very particular conception of apologetics.
Well, because I think this, again, where this misconception that apologetics, a lot of people see this as an evangelistic work to other people. And it is that, but she's missing the idea that this is about you, for the hope that you have in Jesus Christ, right? That we might be firmly founded in our hope. And when you have a hope and you're firmly founded in it, you naturally want to tell other people about the hope that you've found.
I'm sure we have a lot more that we want to say about this article, but we're out of time here, so we'll maybe address it another time. Thank you, John, for being here with us today. It was great having you here.
Thanks so much for having me. It was great to hang out with you guys in this way.
Thank you, listeners, for joining us. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been a ministry of Apologetics Canada, and we'll see you again next week. Bye now.